You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Just gone 7 minutes past 12 o'clock. Good afternoon from me, Ray White, on the Midday Reports. Well, coming up on the program, we've got a breaking news story that's just been handed to me. Getting to that shortly, but also coming up on the program, problems with the vote count at the ANC's KwaZulu-Natal conference, finding out shortly about the new figures there. Then Parliament's inquiry into state capture has resumed with members of the Eskom board and also suspended CFO Anuj Singh set to testify today. Then other news today, Gauteng suspended health HOD Barney Celebano has taken the stand at the Life for Sidimeni hearing. He's got no choice. He was told by the court yesterday that he has to report for duty today to testify. And it's been 4 years since the death of former President Nelson Mandela. So lots going on, and I would like to talk to you on this. I'd like to hear from you. You can SMS me on 31702 or 31567 or just tweet on @RayWhiteSA. But let's get into this. It seems to be a breaking news story. Media conglomerate Naspers and its paid TV arm, MultiChoice, could now be facing a possible class action lawsuit in the US after an American law firm announced that it's now starting an investigation on behalf of Naspers investors into Naspers. Now, this is very interesting. And we've been talking about this story on the show. It all involves MultiChoice and MultiChoice's dealings with the SABC and also with ANN7. There have been all sorts of allegations that have come up to say that MultiChoice spoke to the SABC and said, we'll give you 100 million rand if you sort of help the whole digital migration process. They're worried about encryption. If you influence that process, that's the big allegation that came from the DA. Then you would have heard coming back on the Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, Koos Becker, the person of Naspers, saying this is absolute nonsense. Our lawyers have had a look at this and not at all. There was no wrongdoing whatsoever. So then we bounced it back. And on the Midday Report yesterday, we spoke to the former communications minister, Yunus Karim, about this. And he said, you know what, Ray? Actually, when it comes at the end of the day, Koos Becker did go and speak to, or MultiChoice through him, did go and speak to the SABC. And he's also raised some serious red flags here. Now, shoot the story forward, and we can see now that Naspers may be facing a class action lawsuit. On the line is TV critic and journalist Tinus Ferreira. Good afternoon, Tinus. This is a serious development, isn't it?
So, as you rightly said, MultiChoice said or announced to Naspers that they're doing their own internal investigation. I don't really know how our company can really investigate itself, but now there's another investigation, which at first I thought, oh, this is the law firm that they sort of asked to do the investigation, and then I realized, no, this law firm is doing their own investigation. They're now going straight to Naspers investors, and they're asking them, do you want to join a possible class action lawsuit in America? Naspers is obviously an international company, and they actually put out a call asking for any aggrieved Naspers investors to come forward, to contact them, to possibly sign up, and who are maybe concerned about security fraud or any other unlawful business practices that has been happening at Naspers in relationship to these contracts. And what they are saying is they're doing it because Naspers' American depository receipt price fell on the 1st of December when some of these allegations came out, so that price fell about 5.5%, and obviously there might be investors who's not happy about that.
You see, now that's just like you've said, is such a huge development. I mean, the firm I'm looking at is called Pomerantz. It's offices in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, also Paris. They're acknowledged as one of the premier law firms in the areas of corporate securities and antitrust class litigation. But securities fraud, I mean, this is a huge development.
And also it's uncontainable. So I think if Naspers and MultiChoice did more to actually come out and talk earlier, it actually took them a week. So it's sort of the situation fostered, and now you sort of like have these independent other entities like overseas law firms and things like that getting involved. And also what's interesting is this company was started by Abram Pomerantz. Some listeners might know, like if you hear the name Gloria Allred, for instance, you just know she's sort of this fire-breathing lawyer who always, when there's women who feel aggrieved, for instance, sexual harassment or whatever, they always go to Gloria Allred. So, like, this company is really one of those who's, as you said, one of these premier firms in the areas of antitrust class litigation. Their founder is literally is dead now, but he's literally known as the dean of the antitrust class bar. So it's going to be definitely interesting to see. Like they're not used to sort of like losing. They don't really do other stuff other than sort of these antitrust cases. So it will be interesting to see what they maybe come up with.
Tennis Koos Becker, he went onto the show. He basically said, you know what, MultiChoice is one of our subsidiaries. I don't get involved. MultiChoice must answer for themselves. What do you make of that?
Well, last night I went for dinner with friends and their kids were a bit naughty. And I think it's the same as the parents then saying, oh, the kids have done something, might have done something wrong. The kids need to self-regulate or self-investigate or tell themselves to go and sit on the bed for a time out. Naspers is the parent company, obviously has to take some kind of bigger responsibility for your subsidiaries or your smaller, like to say it's hands off, doesn't really, I don't think there's a lot of sympathy if a company says, our smaller sort of division needs to investigate themselves.
Right, TV critic and journalist Tinus Ferreira. And just looking at this Pomerantz firm, they got offices, like I said, in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. They're also working on claims on behalf of investors of PayPal Holdings. So they're a major law firm themselves and conglomerate themselves. So, yeah, watch this space. A big development in the MultiChoice story.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
Well, let's come back home now. And Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa is leading the nominations for the ANC presidency. It's been the big story of the past few days after all nine provinces completed their provincial general councils. However, the votes of the different leagues, veterans and others still need to be tallied. But now there's been another twist to this tale. The figures in KwaZulu-Natal have been adjusted. On the line is Eyewitness News reporter Ziyanda Tobo. Good afternoon, Ziyanda. What are the new figures then?
Afternoon, Ray. Well, after a delegate yesterday had raised discrepancies with the numbers, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma moved from 433 branches dominating her to become president to 454. Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, who was on 193, now drops to 191 at this stage. So those are the main numbers. And then we've also seen Deputy Secretary General Jesse Duarte's numbers increasing, as well as Nomvula Mokonyane, who's been nominated for Treasurer General.
What was the reason for this recount?
So essentially, I mean, it was quite an intricate explanation given by the Elections Agency, which is an internal elections counting agency of the ANC. But essentially, some of the branches that had submitted their nominations weren't counted, and there were reasons such as forms that had been torn and some were actually inside the actual envelope, etc. Quite confusing, way, to be honest. As journalists, we were also trying to understand what exactly happened here. I think there were also late nominations that were made. But in terms of the actual procedure at the stage, I cannot confirm for you what exactly takes place, but there were some late nominations that were meant to have been counted, especially with the Moses Mabhida and Abakolosi regions, because as soon as the announcement was made yesterday, every region was requested to pay attention to the numbers for their particular region, and if there were discrepancies, then they should raise it with the agency, and that's exactly what happened. And so we saw an increase in the numbers for Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and other people who have been named in her particular leadership core, and a decrease, slight decrease in the deputy president's numbers from 193 to 191.
Are these votes being audited, Ziyanda? I mean, is this a credible recount? And I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Well, at this stage, you can say that it is credible, but I must say that some leaders within the KZN PEC, the incumbent executive, have, you know, told me that they've actually lodged a complaint with Gwede Mantashe's office, saying that the people that he sent here, they don't trust them, they don't believe that they are fair, and that they've actually taken sides. Now, where that process is at this stage, Ray, I cannot tell you, but I am aware of a complaint that has been made, and they're saying they would prefer to have other people being sent in. And so I think the adjustment has sort of helped the elections agency regain some kind of legitimacy with the delegates inside conference at this stage. But I must mention, Ray, that, you know, there has been emphasis on the fact that the processes must have integrity, because if they don't, this has wide-reaching effects for the elective conference itself. And, I mean, this comes amid concerns that the actual elective conference might not even take place. So it was a very interesting dynamic that played out. Although the numbers didn't increase that much, the fact that there was a discrepancy makes this whole process come under question and gives a different kind of mood going into the elective conference next week.
Yeah. Eyewitness News reporter Ziyanda Obo on the line from Durban. Well, let's stay with the story now, and on the line is political analyst based at the University of Pretoria, Professor Tanika Mololeke. Good afternoon, Professor. What do you make then of the votes being recounted?
Well, you know, it is quite disturbing to consider the possibility that something untoward may have happened in these elections. Because if indeed there is something untoward, then people will never be sure that these numbers are credible. Although I don't think these numbers actually do change the bigger picture very much, but it's the principle and the importance of trusting the process. I think that is at stake here.
Yeah, because like you say, a different picture could emerge at the conference anyway. We're looking at the veterans, we're looking at the ANC Youth League, also the Women's League, and also the NEC.
Yeah, certainly. Although, you know, I mean, the influence of the nomination numbers at the conference cannot be predicted, and it is actually quite limited in the sense that, I mean, at the conference, people will vote as individuals. I mean, this is to nominate, to put pre ballot, and I don't think the numbers will change that at all. So I don't know that. You know, apart from the need for the process to be trusted, whether what has happened here will have a large bearing on what happens in Nazareth.
Yeah. And then Matthews Paulson now turning to the courts. He's not happy with the unity vote in Mpumalanga.
Yes, I mean, I think very few people are happy with the vote in Mpumalanga. But more than that, I think many of us are quite confused as to what this means. You know, the fact that you have had an extra candidate voted for, mysterious candidate, effectively. And, you know, so Mpumalanga comes to Nazareth with some of the cards still on their chest. We don't really know what could stand up, but could turn out. But, you know, my sense is that Mpumalanga is a mystery even to itself. And so Mpumalanga could end up surprising itself at Nazareth.
Yeah, indeed. Political analyst based at the University of Pretoria, Professor Tanika Mololeke. I do appreciate you coming on to the Midday Report this afternoon.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
23 minutes past 12 o'clock. Parliament's inquiry into state capture has resumed, with members of the Eskom board and also suspended CFO Anuj Singh set to testify. Singh is reportedly accused of financial misconduct and is facing internal disciplinary charges. The inquiry is investigating widespread corruption involving Gupta-aligned companies and executives at the state-owned power utility. On the line is Eyewitness News parliamentary reporter Rahima Esop. Good afternoon. afternoon, Rahima. So questions once again about Brian Molefe's pension payouts. Who's been speaking today then so far?
Yes, MPs, Ray, have to sort fact from fiction as they attempt to uncover exactly what went wrong when Brian Molefe left Eskom. He says he took early retirement, even though he had created the impression that he was stepping down in the interest of good governance following the release of Tuli Madonsela's State of Capture report last year. Now, that report showed that Molefe was suspiciously in close communication with the Gupta brothers. Today, MPs heard from Anton Minar, an Eskom manager, who played a role in facilitating the pension payout. Only permanent employees are allowed to be members of the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund. But Minister Lynn Brown was insistent that Molefe should be given a five-year contract. We've heard this. We've heard this throughout the inquiry. Minar now says he regarded Molefe's employment status as permanent with a term, something which one MP pointed out this morning seems to be a legal impossibility. Now, Ray, much has been said about the retirement slash resignation fiasco. Opinions have been formed in various sectors, memes have been generated, and we've heard explanations that have left us scratching our heads, let's be honest. Yeah. So if you feel like you're in an alternative reality, I don't blame you. And for example, let me give you an example. 2 weeks ago, the inquiry's evidence leader pointed out to Molefe that he had released a press statement when he left Eskom that created the impression that he was resigning in the interest of good governance, to which Molefe responded with an analogy. He said that intending to get married doesn't mean you are married until you are standing in front of the marriage officer and reading out your vows.
And you've signed on the dotted line as well. Rahima, has Anuj Singh arrived yet? He is the star of today's show.
Well, he is expected to appear. I don't see him yet, but he is on the agenda. Now, his name has come up numerous times in the narrative that has emerged about the Gupta's influence over Eskom. He appears to be a key link between Gupta-aligned companies and Eskom with regards to their dealings with Trillion, as well as the purchase of the Tegeta coal mine. So, as you say, he is the star of the show. He is going to be in the hot seat, and I expect that's going to happen much later today.
Eyewitness News parliamentary reporter Rahima Esop.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
4 years ago, former President Nelson Mandela passed away. President Jacob Zuma announced on TV, I'll never forget that night, announcing on TV that the former statesman had died at his house in Houghton. The anniversary comes at a critical time for South African politics, with the ANC set to decide on its new leadership, as you would have heard in the show so far. On the line is the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Sello Hatang. Good afternoon, Sello. Welcome to the Midday Report.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thank you very much.
It's been 4 years since Madiba passed away. What has the foundation been involved in? Just take us through some of your major projects.
Thank you very much. Well, since Madiba's passing, what he did back with at the time that he launched the foundation and the Center of Memory, it was for us to do memory work. We've been doing that. Recently, we published a book that he started writing, which he never managed to finish. We completed that on his behalf with the co-author being Ntate Mandlalanga. So that process and the project was successful. The book is called Dare Not Linger because it's about Madiba. We took the title of Madiba's, or rather the end of Long Walk to Freedom, where he said that when you get to the top of a great hill, you then realize there's many more hills to climb. Mm. But you may just rest a little and dare not linger because the long walk continues. Yeah. And we believe that with the fourth anniversary, we should continue to do this kind of memory work. Memory work that says to all of us, we need to be doing more to preserve the legacy, but to grow it. Grow it free of corruption, free of any social ills like things like racism, that we must deal with poverty and inequality. And deal with other social ills like women and children being the most vulnerable, continuing to be as vulnerable as they are.
Absolutely. Sello, just getting to the politics of the day, the ANC coming under fire on many fronts. What do you think Madiba would say about the state of the party today?
I never like speaking for Madiba. Madiba, I think, would have been better placed to speak for himself. But all we know is that in terms of where we are, is definitely the issues of leadership, corruption that we have in our country is something that we are not pleased with, and we should be working hard to root it out. But that we as we said previously, that we shouldn't just be concentrating on an individual, for example, but we should be saying you root out the networks, because the networks should have affected the party, therefore affected the organization itself and the government. And I think until such time that we root out networks of corruption, we won't be going any far in terms of any further in terms of bringing about real change in the lives of people.
Yeah, and then speaking of which, I mean, the public protector finding hundreds of millions of rands meant for planning Madiba's funeral were misappropriated. I mean, this is shocking news.
Precisely, and we're still horrified by that, Ray, and we're calling on all the agencies of state to say, all those that have been called upon to act must root out this corruption. Those who have been fingered by the public protector must be charged for having done something wrong, and we must then ensure that the law takes its course. But of course, this, in our view, came at the best time. It couldn't have been a better timing, because next year marks the anniversary of Madiba's birth. And if we are to do anything in terms of the centenary of Madiba, is to remind ourselves that it's these kind of things of diversion of money from projects that would have changed the lives of people into celebrations. And I think if there's anything we can do, Ray, is to say that members of the public, including public servants, must then be on the lookout for diversion of money and people who would be looking out to make the last buck out of Madiba's, in Madiba's name. But then it also says something about how we need to be bringing back the values in our country. I mean, if people cannot even just respect a funeral, something that you'd really think would be so sacred that you can't even imagine people being corrupted at such an event, it tells us that we need to be helping build a values-based society. Yeah. So tonight we're launching our centenary and our centenary program, and also the exhibition titled Unthreading Madiba, and it's about how we unthread the legacy and also how we can help build the legacy.
Right, we'll have to leave it there. CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Sello Hatung, I do appreciate you coming on to the Midday Report this afternoon.
The Midday Report. Business.
Don't forget, you can SMS on 31702 or 31567, or just tweet on @RayWhiteSA, reading out some of those shortly. You would have heard in Eyewitness News, South Africa's economy grew by 2% in the third quarter of 2017 after expanding by a revised 2.8% in the second quarter. Stats SA says gross domestic product rose 0.8% on an unadjusted year-on-year basis in the third quarter, compared with a revised 1.3% expansion in the previous 3 months. Economists polled by Reuters had expected a quarter-on-quarter GDP expansion of 1.5%, so it's above that, it's 2%. In other news, a survey has shown that South African private sector activity slowed for November as new orders and output fell. The Standard Bank Purchasing Managers Index fell to 48.8 points in November from 49.6 in October. It has stayed below the 50 mark that separates expansion from contraction. So not good news. Looking at the markets now, a bit of a horror story today. Short while ago, the All Share was under pressure, down about 1.22% at 58,881 points. Resources and industrials down over 1.5%. The gold miners are down over 2%. And then just looking at the board, Amplats down over 3%. Naspers down over 3.5%. Aspen, Azor, and also Goldfields all down over 2%. But good news for the Rand, 13.52 to the dollar, improving quite a bit, 18.12 to the pound, 16.03 to the euro, gold $1,275.31, platinum $921.10, and then Brent crude oil is now $62.37. More business news with Bruce on The Money Show this evening.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
Some of your SMSs. One says, Ray, Brian Malef is pension payment SARS must be in cahoots. How did he get a tax directive? The big thing is, I mean, it was quite interesting with Rahima Esop, the way the one guy described it. He wasn't permanent, but he had it came permanent with a term. I think that's what she said. Permanent with a term. How does that work? And of course, I think he's been paid out so far 16 million rand out of the 30 million rand for his pension money. Will they be getting that money back? And then also looking at the SMS line, quite a few people now calling for an investigation into MultiChoice. The big story that broke on the Midday Report earlier on is that an American law firm is now looking at a class action lawsuit into MultiChoice to see if people benefited in any certain way between within the talks between the SABC and MultiChoice, and also dealings with ANN7 as well. And of course, Koos Becker coming on to the Money Show and saying they did nothing wrong, but the former communications minister, Yunus Karim, saying he doesn't believe that for a second.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
19 minutes to 1 o'clock, and Gauteng suspended health HOD Barney Selebano has taken the stand at the Life Ceremony hearing. He's got no choice, you see, after the High Court ruled against him yesterday. The families of psychiatric patients who died after being moved from the Ceremony facilities, they want answers. He is one of three top officials who have been caught to explain why 143 people died. On the line is Eyewitness News reporter Masego Rahlaga. Good afternoon, Masego. So, Barney Selebano on the stand at last, but he asked not to be cross-examined. What else has he said?
Good afternoon, Ray. Yes, just after he was sworn in to testify, his lawyers actually asked Chief Justice Sihang Motsoenege. They basically said, Ray, that they don't understand. They still don't understand the reason why he's been called to testify. They believe that his testimony is not going to be of any help to the arbitration. But of course, the retired Deputy Chief Justice said no to this. He dismissed that, of course, because of the fact that part of the reasons why this arbitration process was established is for the families to get answers from the people who played key roles in the project, to be able to get answers from them and try to map out what happened to their loved ones. What he said so far, Ray, is that he's, first of all, just now, before I started speaking to you, he conceded that some of these NGOs were forced or pressured to take in more patients than they could, meaning the obvious thing that we've always known since this arbitration process started, that, for example, an NGO would be able, would have capacity for 10, but they would suddenly be licensed to take in 40 patients. What he's also said is that the first time he found out, Ray, as HOD, the first time he found out that patients were dying was in July last year, when he got a call from Minister Arun Motsoaledi, who told him to move fast in taking the patients out of Precious Angels. Now, as you know, Ray, Precious Angels is one of those NGOs that was identified by the Health Ombudsman as those ones where most patients lost their lives.
Yeah.
And Dr. Selebano is saying that he first heard about the how bad it was when the health minister gave him a call demanding that he shut it down.
What has the reaction been from the families so far? I mean, did they come in their numbers like they said they would?
Definitely, they did come in their numbers, Ray. As you said earlier, he is one of three top officials within the Gauteng Health Department that is giving answers. Already, his colleague, Dr. Manamela, testified, and of course, the former health MEC, Katani Mahlangu, will come next year around January. The families were very happy to see him. They were very happy to see that he has indeed come. They were very angry at first, Ray, when proceedings started, of course, when his lawyers tried to ask that he not be cross-examined and instead he be given a chance to just to apologize and leave. They obviously were not happy about that, but they were happy when the state attorney actually said that he is no special witness, there is no special treatment, he will be treated the same as every other witness. And so far what they've been doing, Ray, is basically just listening attentively to his answers.
Eyewitness News reporter Masego Rahlaga on the line from Parktown. Health Minister Erin Motsoaledi has announced that at least 30 people have died in South Africa after an outbreak of listeria. The bacteria is found in soil and water and vegetation. It causes food poisoning. Now, we're trying to get the Health Minister on the line, Dr. Erin Motsoaledi, to chat about this. 30 people dying in different provinces. I've never heard of listeria whatsoever. Anyway, we will be chatting to him shortly. Just looking at some of your SMSs at the moment, a lot of people getting very angry with MultiChoice. But that's the thing. We need to get clarity on this. What was said in those SABC minutes comes down to the fact that there have been allegations by the Democratic Alliance that there was wrongdoing within MultiChoice when they were asked, they asked the SABC saying, we'll give you 100 million rand if you change the whole sort of narrative that's going on around digitization and encryption. But I suppose we have to wait and see what happens with that. Is that the case or is that not? Just some of your other SMSs as well. One says, hi Ray, good afternoon. I can't believe it's been 4 years since the passing of Madiba. Another one says, Ray, Madiba would be angry with what's happened with the ruling party, the ANC. We don't like what's happened, and this needs to be corrected once and for all. Keep your SMSs coming on 31702 or 31567. You can also tweet on @RayWhiteSA.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
9 minutes to 1 o'clock. Health Minister Dr. Erin Motsoaledi has announced that at least 30 people have died in South Africa after an outbreak of listeria. The bacteria is found in soil, water and vegetation. It causes food poisoning. The Health Minister Dr. Erin joins us now live on the Midday Reports. Good afternoon, Minister. Welcome.
Good afternoon and good afternoon to the listeners.
What exactly then is listeria or listeriosis?
Well, listeriosis is a condition, a disease condition caused by a bacterium, which is called Listeria monocytogenes, which is foodborne. You get it from contaminated food. As you explained very well, the bacteria is found naturally in soil, in water, and in vegetation. So any one of those three can contaminate foodstuffs. And when you eat that food, you get listeriosis. There are three things that can happen to you when you get listeriosis. Number one, you can get flu-like symptoms like headache, fever, general body pains, joint pains, tiredness, nausea or vomiting. You can even get diarrhea. That's the first thing you can get. The second thing, you can get what you call senia, which means infection of the whole bloodstream, which means your whole blood is poisoned with the bacteria. And then the last thing, you can get meningoencephalopathy, which means your brain and the membranes around the brain are now infected.
Sure. Now, 30 people have died. Are these similar areas? Where exactly were they found?
Absolutely not. That's where the problem is. That's why we had to take the press conference and determine. It's not in the same place. So when one person dies there, the other one there, you won't be able to know that there's a pattern. You only know if there's a pattern if that disease is notifiable. But listeriosis is not notifiable in South Africa. Notifiability means a law that says any doctor or any health worker across any part of the country who come across this disease must phone a certain selected central authority, usually a government authority. Now, that then it will tell you where it's occurring. But listeriosis is not notifiable because for the past 40 years, the first time it came to South Africa is 40 years ago. It has not been a problem. Our doctors have been seeing it in hospitals every year and treating them because it's treatable. They were seeing 60, maybe at most 80 cases throughout the whole year. Now, this time in July, doctors at Steve Biko Academic Hospital and Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital started seeing a large number of neonates, newborn babies, who have got this infection. And they got worried that, look, we are not used to this. We do see people with listeriosis, but it looks like the numbers are going up. So they alerted the NICD, the National Institute of Communicable Diseases. Mm. What the NICD did was to apply international health regulations, meaning a method whereby you determine whether this thing is a coincidence or whether it's an outbreak or whether it's from the same source and all that. So they started moving to January. conducting private laboratories around the country and right. government laboratories. And in November, they reached a conclusion that this indeed is an outbreak.
Sure, it's quite something. If you get sick, you can be cured because we're talking bacteria here, not virus.
Sorry?
I was saying if you do get sick, if you have some of those symptoms, you can be cured. There is a cure for this because we're talking bacteria and not virus.
Oh, that's brilliant. You are right. This is not a virus, it's a bacteria. So it does have a cure and it's cured with an antibiotic called ampicillin. But unfortunately, while it has got a cure, it's also virulent.
Right.
Meaning it's a very angry bacteria. You know, you can cure it, but it can be very fatal because it's virulent. It's a serious bacteria in other ways.
Right, right. Minister of Health, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, I do appreciate you coming on to the Midday Report. What we're going to do is we are going to put the story into our news bulletins, the symptoms as well, and also podcast our interview just to make sure that there's a general awareness out there because there is a cure. Britain's Brexit from Europe has hit yet another snag. In Northern Ireland, the Democratic Unionist Party says it will not accept a deal on the Irish border question brokered by Prime Minister Theresa May. Northern Ireland is classed differently to the rest of the UK, and this throws the original talks into chaos. On the line is our Europe correspondent, Peter Anderson. Good afternoon, Peter. This gives Northern Ireland quite a bit of power, doesn't it?
Good afternoon. It certainly does. And we all expected the announcement to be made that this was the pivotal breakthrough, that this was the agreement between the EU and the UK that would enable us to go on to trade talks. And that's what everybody wants to discuss, what the relationship will be, what the tariffs will be, how the trade will be between the two parties once we exit the European Union in March 2019. And it seems that Theresa May had agreed terms. She had a lunch with the European Commission President, Jean-Claude Juncker, and there were briefings behind the scenes that this was the breakthrough. The call was then made between Theresa May and Arlene Foster, the leader of the Democratic Unionist Party, and that torpedoed this deal. The reason that this is significant is since our election here back in June, the government, the Conservatives, have not had an overall majority, and they only have a majority in Parliament thanks to the support of the 10 Democratic Unionist Party MPs, and without that support, the government could fall. So this does mean, as you imply, there is huge power handed to this very small party, this small number of MPs in Northern Ireland.
So, Peter, what happens now then? Because it seems to be a little bit of a stalemate.
There is a stalemate, but there is a very important deadline looming, and that is a summit that takes place next week on December 14th and 15th of all the EU leaders, so the heads of state from the 27 other nations, and they are planning or they are hoping to ratify that everything is now on course. If we do not have agreement within the next couple of days, there will not be time for each of those 27 nations to discuss these talks, to discuss this agreement in their own countries, and so this whole process will fall down again. And everybody has pinned so much store on the breakthrough coming in December. We're 9 months into a two-year negotiation period, and at the moment, very little progress is being made. And if we do not get agreement on this basic sort of relationship between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, it could mean that the whole talks collapse, and we end up with what is being called no deal. So the UK would leave the EU without any kind of agreement on financial arrangements or trade deals with the bloc, and that is something that nobody realistically wants.
I mean, this is quite shocking. Do you think people like Boris Johnson actually thought through this beforehand when they were so sort of, I don't know, they just wanted this Brexit to happen come hell or high water?
Well, interestingly, I think the sort of people who are keen to leave, like Boris Johnson, our Foreign Secretary, other ministerial colleagues, they have wanted the UK to fight a tough negotiation with the EU. And it is believed that they actually support the Democratic Unionist stance on this. They felt that the agreement that had been drawn up on effectively allying Northern Ireland to the rest of Europe, giving Northern Ireland a special status, they felt that that went too far. And so there are many sceptics, many anti-Europeans within the Conservative Party who say, yes, we are right to put the brakes on this. We need to get a deal that serves Britain's purposes, doesn't see us fobbing off to the European demands.
And then what is Europe saying about this on the other end?
They have been stunned. They thought that this was a done deal. And normally you end up with negotiations failing between the UK and the EU. You don't have negotiations being made and then a minor squabble within the UK itself torpedoing the whole deal. So there is a sense of stunned amazement and also dismay as we move forward in this entire process.
UK correspondent Peter Anderson on the line from London. And that wraps up the Midday Report because it is 1 o'clock.